show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, where is it at? Let's talk about Ukraine and exactly what is going on there now. Let me see, where is it at? Officials say over 10,000 Ukrainian troops are killed in the war thus far. 10,000, that's...
Yeah, I think they said between 10 and 13,000. They wanted to be that vague. I don't know why an official announcement would give you that kind of a range.
Sandy, so let's just put that in perspective. In 9 years of war in Vietnam,
50,000.
And here we are.
50,000 Americans.
Yeah. 50,000 Americans.
There were
millions.
Millions of Vietnamese who suffered either death or terrible casualties.
So this is, you know, are we in a year yet in this? Well, the war's been longer than that, going back to 2014.
Well, 10 months. I think this number is the number that dates back to the February 24th invasion and henceforth. But... you know, I am getting hopeful that we're getting to the eve of negotiations. People are talking about negotiations. Of course, they're posturing. You know, Putin says he's ready to negotiate as soon as someone comes to him and says they want to talk. This is all about this reluctance to be the first one to the party, because the first one to the party is viewed as the one that's asking to negotiate. And if you're asking to negotiate, you're doing it out of weakness. On our side, we've got public displays of machismo-like Biden saying, it's fine, we'll settle this thing. All Russia needs to do is withdraw all its troops, and then we can have conversations. So that's echoing what Zelensky has said. Well, of course, that's a public posture as well, that's to display strength. They're going to go to talk, but they're not going to do it out of weakness. And then the question is, what is the nature of the situation that causes the people to get in a room and have conversations? Well, number one, the conversations are going to be private, not public. And they're going to be going on at a time when the public doesn't understand that there are discussions, because they need to be held in such a manner that neither side is asking for it, and they're just getting together and having discussions. And I think we're probably on the very brink of that. We've said we're willing, you know, Biden has now said he's willing to talk to Putin directly. It's seemingly, earlier he said he would only do that with Zelensky in the room. This time that wasn't there. So that suggests to me that there might be a chance that the U.S. would have direct discussions. You know, there have been interesting things ongoing in Europe, a recognition in Europe that Europe isn't strong enough without the United States. The young prime minister of Finland yesterday was talking about how the Europeans needed to develop a much stronger military capability onto themselves so that they didn't have to rely on the United States.
But Sandy, that's not a revelation.
It's not a revelation, but it's interesting because Europe is talking about trying to free itself from being dependent upon the United States, which, of course, one of the things that the United States liked about NATO when it set it up is it made Europe dependent on the United States. And when Trump was talking about dumping NATO, President Macron, the fellow who's just in Washington right now from France, immediately said, yes, I think we should set up a European army. And that was, and the Pentagon pretty quickly came out and said, oh, yeah, no, we just want people to contribute more to NATO. So I think several things are going to come out of the current situation. One, I think Europe will become stronger onto itself so that it is not so dependent on the United States. Number two, that dependency on the United States does show that the United States is in the position to lead the notion of a negotiation with Russia, because it's the support of the United States that is critical to the Ukraine's capacity to defend itself and at what level of defense. And there also has been now significant writing about the very thing I was talking about in earlier shows, which is the danger that to the U.S. of Ukraine becoming active in the Crimea and putting Sevastopol in a threatened position, because that will harden the lines a great deal. And everyone understands that a probable settlement of this needs to include a recognition by Ukraine that Crimea is Russian. And working from there, the settlement might become fairly easy. And so there has been now talk at the Pentagon level and in the press, which is clearly based on leaks, about how it is that the U.S. does see some danger in Ukraine becoming too active and potentially too effective in the Crimea.
So, Sandy, here is the Ukraine is and the Ukrainian people, the realization of a coal-hungry winter with their electricity shut off because Russia is escalating their assaults and their attacks, and now we see David and Goliath, because, you know, Russia just has what appears to be, when you're the number two strongest military in the world, an endless supply of weapons that they can use to continue to assault, Ukraine. And it doesn't matter, you know, they can say, well, America can say, we'll give you another $800 billion worth. That at some time.
$800 billion. Holy cow.
Excuse me, not $800 billion.
$80 billion. Yeah.
And so that sounds like a lot of money, and it is, but that is nothing compared to what Russia can continue.
Well, but the other thing that portends settlement is that we've got Congress now doing what I think they should do, which is saying there needs to be oversight and audits associated with the $80 billion that is flowing to Ukraine. Ukraine's a very corrupt place. America isn't entirely without corruption when it comes down to military expenditures and the way they handle it. And so, you know, when you get that kind of money awash, you want to have oversight about it. And there's beginning to develop a concern that all these weapons and all this money that's flowing to Ukraine might not be going in the direction that it was intended. And so that oversight. Number two, there's a growing number of people in Congress saying, hey, we're having second thoughts about this. We're not going to give the president an open checkbook to send gifts over to Ukraine at whatever level he decides is necessary to support the war. We want to get involved in this and be a part of the process of determining whether and if there's more money. So the United States is beginning to slow down in its enthusiasm.
Especially from Republican side of it.
Europe has looked at the United and looked at this and said, well, number one, all these sanctions, the United States is basically the oil companies in the United States are thriving. The United States economy is still out of recession. We in Europe are in recession and having 10% or more inflation. We have energy costs that have gone up. I read on a rolling year basis, it's been like 40%. I mean, the level of inflation in Europe of food and oil and gas has been astronomic. And of course, a lot of that is attributable to the Ukraine war. Food is attributable there, and so is oil and gas. And so, you know, there's a limit to the patience to be involved here. So all of this, gives me hope that people will sit down at the table. And Russia doesn't have endless resources. They do have finite resources. It looks like they're sending...
Endless when it comes to battling against Ukraine, if Ukraine was left alone his own...
Yes. If Ukraine were left to its own devices without all the support from the West, they would crumble quickly. Right. And they probably would have crumbled as quickly as almost as Putin had predicted when he thought it would be a 10-day war. But that's not going to be the case, and we're not going to put them in that position. But Russia is apparently beginning to exhaust its supply of missiles. Missiles is the way it attacks the infrastructure. I do believe that the infrastructure of any country is very vulnerable, very exposed, very easy to attack, and probably hard to defend. Ukraine is now begging for much more sophisticated air defense systems, which I think we're reluctant to give them. And it would be only with very sophisticated air defense systems that they could stop missiles from taking out their power plants and transmission lines, because those are all sitting ducks.
Which is starting to have major impact on Ukraine. And Now, I was reading this article earlier, Sandy, about the drones that are really being successful in attacking these entities.
The infrastructure.
It's via drones.
Yeah, with the Iranian drones.
Right, with the Iranian drones. And I was reading that many of those drones have American companies that have parts in those drones. And so there's been some push back that the American businesses that are creating the parts that are in the drones that are attacking Ukraine, that, hey, America's got to make some decisions. The companies that produce these parts, it's a discussion that should be had.
Well, you know, Iran has been under the tightest of sanctions, and I'm confident that any of the parts that are made in the U.S. that get to their drones get there indirectly. The company in the United States that makes the part, that sells the part, is not selling it directly to Iran. They're selling it to a third party someplace else, some other country. It's a demonstration. That is a demonstration of the limitation on the effectiveness of sanctions. The world is filled with people who are good at trading things and working around sanctions, and it's just as true that the sanctions on Russia are being evaded. It makes things more expensive in Russia for the things that aren't supposed to get there and get there indirectly. And the same is probably true with these parts. But, you know, the United States is a munitions supplier to the world. You know, I would guess that as between Russia, the United States, and China, there isn't a military thing that's made in the world that doesn't have parts from at least one and probably two of those countries. Many of our weapons have Chinese parts in them.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, I was asking you about the Donald Trump phenomena. I for the life of me, you know, I'm having a tough time understanding why he just does not disappear. A man with that kind of baggage, and you've got, you know, the Mitch McConnells, the Lindsey Grahams, you've got very, very powerful conservatives' voices with national recognition,
mm-hmm.
who've been around a long time, and then you top that off with deep-pocketed people like the guy who owns Fox News and everybody,
Rupert Murdoch
and others with prominence, are saying, hey, listen, you've even got loud mouths like Laura Ingraham and others
backing away from Trump.
Yeah. All of these people who supported him completely are now saying, hey, whoa, wait a minute. Damaged merchandise. It's bad for the Republican brand. We're all going to go down with him.
You know what?
He's going to sink. He's the Titanic, right?
Well, you know, they. I think it's. But here, it's more cynical than that. It's not that they think he's damaged goods. He's always been these damaged goods. I think what they've come to realize is that the coalition he's built, this group of strident backers that he has, is good enough to get the nomination, and not good enough to win the election. And so, you
know, is that all they want is for him to get the nomination?
They want to win the election, and they want to win the elections. And they are, I think, correctly viewing the fact that Trump's the reluctance of a bunch of people to vote for people like Trump is on a national basis when you have a multi-party race is a problem for the Republicans. That group is strong enough within the Republican Party to maybe to earn the nomination, and then the person who earns the nomination is not someone who can get elected. I mean, we're going to find out the ultimate test in Georgia, I suspect, quite soon. But, I think that they're cynically have realized this guy's going to lose elections for us.
Correct. I mean, the Republicans' machine, so to speak, that's been around for a long time, they know.
Well, they try. These people are such chameleons. You know, when Trump first started running, Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, all these people made it very clear, this guy should not get the nomination. You know, he was outside the party machinery completely, outside of control from the party completely. And to be honest with you, that is half of his appeal to all the MAGA folks. He's been able to establish himself as a martyr. He's an anti-establishment candidate who has been able to get his followers to believe that he is being martyred and that he is being victimized by the people who oppose him for his anti-establishment views. And he does have anti-establishment views, kind of. He's got very autocratic pro-Trump views, but the people who support him think that way. And the party apparatus then decided, that, like chameleons, that they would decide he was a good guy because he got elected, so he obviously could win an election. So they all began to suck up to him. But now that they realize he might be vulnerable, they're back to holding their nose and trying to get rid of him. And maybe this time they'll succeed. I'm not sure. I'm sure he's going to be a powerful influence at the Republican National Convention in 2024.
So, Sandy, it's safe to say that if he doesn't win, he will burn it down, and he would run completely as a third-party candidate.
A bull moose.
Yeah, it's safe to say that is what is in store for the Republican Party. How do they? They can't corral him. There's nothing they can do to corral him. He's still as obstinate as he was. He doesn't care. He's still being who he can't be somebody different, can he?
No, I mean, I think that's why we're going to see a great deal of early enthusiasm for anyone that they think can sink his ship. And you can see it now, Ron DeSantis. Yeah. All of a sudden, this guy is it. And we're going to see a bunch of people coalescing behind him because I think their hope is, the establishment Republicans, their hope is that they can sink the Trump ship early, you know, get it out, put it out of commission before the 2024 convention, and hopefully put it so far out of commission that he doesn't even have the wherewithal to run in a third party and sink their ship that way.
Well, Sandy, that's that internal battle between the Republican Party. They have to settle that between 2024, between now and 2024, and they're going to be wounded and damaged. And I don't care who runs on a Democratic side of things. I don't care what condition the society is that the country is in by then. The damage that's going to be wrought in that battle between the Trumpians and the other side of the Republican Party is going to be mortal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really believe that. Donald Trump, as you have stated, is this immovable object, right?
Well, he's definitely a freewheeling, independent player, and that's really what I think is most troublesome. And the fact is that he is, in so many ways, a powerfully negative person and a dangerous person. And it could be, although I don't believe so, that Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and their like have decided that the country is more important than the party. I don't think that's why they're doing this. They aren't doing this out of because they didn't behave like that.
Well, it's for survival.
They haven't behaved like that back when he was president whatsoever. They did nothing about him while he was president. They condemned him for about 3 days after the January 6th uprising, and then it was clear that he still had power, and so look at it today.
Well, we got to go to the break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I was going through some things on last night before today's show. Sam Bankman, young guy who created this whole...
the FTX, the exchange for cryptocurrencies.
Yeah. He certainly done some things. Is it his fault, or would you say it's people who followed him?
Well, it's a bit like Enron. He took a business model, then he took his business model into a marketplace where the people who were investing were not very careful investors, who weren't doing much research independently, who were sort of extravagant in terms of their willingness to take risks.
So before you go too far, let's talk about what cryptocurrency really was or is. Because I never understood where the value on that currency came from.
Well, why is gold valuable?
Because it's shiny and pretty.
Yeah, that's how it started. But no, gold became very valuable because it was scarce.
Right.
It was recognized as something that could have value, and it was scarce. And so people decided in their own mind, sort of
the world sort of decided.
You know what? We're going to attribute a value to gold, and we're going to take gold bars, and we're going to be able to ascribe a value to it, and then we will exchange these bars with one another, and for a long time at least, currencies had gold backing them up. But gold, of course, backing it up doesn't make any difference unless gold is viewed as valuable. So ultimately, something that people are willing to recognize as valuable, which is scarce, can be viewed as being valuable.
So how was
like
cryptocurrency
gold? So cryptocurrency,
scarce?
Well, cryptocurrency, that's the one thing it is. The way it was designed, for instance, the Bitcoin, there is a finite number of Bitcoins that can ever be found.
Yeah, but the metal doesn't have value.
Well, there's no metal at value. This is just saying this thing
has value.
Is scarce, and we're going to decide to attribute value to it because it has a finite, there will be a finite amount of it, and we can use it in this particularly interesting way, because we can transfer it by computer. It isn't any more longer a physical commodity. It's a virtual commodity. It's virtual gold, essentially.
But many smart people with resources got suckered into it.
Well, There are a lot of smart people who think that this is, in fact, a very sound idea. I never was one of those. Warren Buffett always was saying, you know, if these people who buy and sell this would probably buy and sell manure, you know, if it became fashionable and valuable. It happened in Holland when they were buying and selling tulip bulbs. And there was the, you know, in the 1500s, there was this, or 1600s, a big tulip bubble. With people investing in tulips. So these things happen. Gold could go out of fashion as well. If gold went out of fashion, everyone would be kind of screwed, right? Because that's sort of the ultimate underlying value. The view was that Bitcoin could be the virtual form of gold, but it lacks some things. It lacks the capacity to predict its value. And that's a very fundamental thing if you're going to use it as currency. Because like I've said before, if you want to buy something a year from now, you're going to say, I'll buy your house, but I don't want to buy it today. I'll buy it a year from now, and I'll buy it from you for $400,000. And you look at that and you say, yeah, we'll do that. I say, I want to do it in Bitcoins. Well, if you're selling it for $400,000 in Bitcoins, you're not going to think that's a good idea, because you don't want to take the risk that Bitcoins could collapse.
It has the same value,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because it might collapse. And so you aren't very interested in doing that, except that back in the day when gold was around, you would have done it for gold, because gold had a predictable, stabilized kind of value. So cryptocurrency isn't stable, and it doesn't have this inherent capacity to be recognized as money. It hasn't been around long enough, hasn't been recognized that way, and it's going to fizzle.
So if people who did not understand the risk, and was it a scam?
Well, I guess Bitcoins weren't a scam. The FTX exchange was so recklessly put together, it wasn't really a scam, but it was a recklessly unregulated, and it was unregulated. There was, this kind of a commodity doesn't require regulation. Go ahead.
To push, I actually think, Sam Bankman-Fried, he's like said, he's tried to kind of spin this entire mistake kind of PR type story. But like, if you look at the transactions, because the thing about Bitcoin is that, and this is what makes it separate from typical fiat currency, is that like every single transaction you make is public, right? So even if you're a CEO of a private Bitcoin firm, people can still see all the transactions you make.
No, Bitcoin is absolutely dark.
FTX, like, you can go inside the ledger, right, of the public ledger it's more difficult to track, but it is possible for any person if they understand how to go and look at the ledger and see all transactions.
Yes, if you use the exchange, Bitcoin can be used, though. You know, I can sell you drugs and you can send me Bitcoins, and it doesn't have to be transferred through FTX. Yeah,
but FTX specifically, because like FTX, if you want to focus on FTX, the reason why I would say that it's more likely to be a scam is because that ledger shows that he specifically transferred funds to Alameda Research.
So let me just correct you, though. The scam there is the FTX exchange, not the Bitcoin underlying it. Okay, so the FTX ended up being a commodity exchange to sell commodities that were virtual currencies, Ether and Bitcoin, the various virtual currencies. They were commodities. That would be like selling oranges and almonds, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And they were being sold on the FTX exchange, which would be a version of a virtual exchange for virtual currencies, like the commodity exchange in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the question is whether the commodity exchange in Chicago is mishandling the customers. So for FTX, you would have an account at FTX. And you would have your Bitcoin account there, and you'd be buying and selling Bitcoins into and out of your account and a ledger at FTX. And then the problem was that FTX was mishandling your ledger terribly. They were lending money to third parties that was based on the value in your ledger, which wasn't owned by the exchange. It was owned by you. It was a bit like a bank lending out your savings in a savings account, which is allowed and regulated. But this was unregulated, and it was done at levels that were unsupportable. And they were lending it to this Alameda, which incidentally was related to Mr. Bankman, right? Bankman-Fried. So so there was definitely the conduct of Bankman-Fried, which he now is running around the country saying, look, I'm not a bad guy. I'm just really negligent.
Yeah, I made mistakes.
I really made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, the reason why I'm just not 100% down on the story is because like FTX is an exchange, right? But then also they have a current currency, a cryptocurrency called FTT token, right?
Yeah.
And the entire controversy is that like he basically used this currency that the company completely created, and he was very much so aware that it was created, even though he tried to say that it was something that was responsible for an engineer. He doesn't know how to code or whatever, but he created this cryptocurrency that he used then as collateral for a transaction, despite the fact that it's not based on anything. He created the currency himself to keep it, relatively simple. So that's where the scam comes in, right?
Well, yeah. But I mean, I'm just saying you can confuse. The scam is not, I mean, I think Bitcoin is a very, very risky investment.
I mean, I would classify that.
The scam is not Bitcoin in this circumstance. If you're going to look for a scam and sniff out a scam, the scam relates to how the trading exchange FTX was handled and how the ledgers were handled of the customers on FTX.
So let me ask you, how could that not be regulated by the same entity that regulates the others?
Well, because the laws that describe what shall be regulated, first of all, regulated by law is different than being regulated by the exchange. A number of things are traded pursuant to regulations that are created by the exchange itself. And the exchange has those regulations because they want to be a trusted exchange where people can exchange commodities. There isn't as much regulation of commodity exchanges as there is of securities exchanges. And it turns out that cryptocurrency fell outside the definition of anything. It was like buying and selling dollars. You're free to buy and sell dollars as much as you want. Right?
Yeah, but the dollars...
We buy and sell dollars every day.
But the dollars are government currency.
Yeah, this was a new and novel enterprise, the cryptocurrency, and it was created.
But it didn't have the backing that government currency has, which made it a risk, right?
Well, this is another semester, but ultimately the value of the dollar is dependent on you believing that it's worth a dollar. Yeah. It isn't that the government is going to make it a dollar. It's that you believe it's worth a dollar. Because if you decide it's not worth anything, the government will have to print millions of these worthless things for you to be persuaded that you have value. And so ultimately, the faith in a currency is dependent on the people who hold the currency.
But if I look on that government note, the government is there to back it up, right?
With what?
Well, the gold.
We went off the gold and silver standard. There's no. It's the full faith and credit, supposedly, but the dollar doesn't have backing. What the government does back is the debt instruments. So they sell a treasury instrument that's $1,000 debt. You buy it. Now the government owes you $1,000. You're going to get $1,000 back because the government can print it. You better. Do you think that it's worth $1,000?
So the faith and belief in that government note known as the dollar, the rest of the world clamors for it.
No, the rest of the world creates that value by believing it.
Yeah.
No, it's that simple. But it's a very pervasive belief. And so it works, and because it's very, 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 very.
That sounds like a house of cards.
It's very convenient to have currency to trade rather than everything being, I'll give you 2 ears of corn if you'll give me that box of peas.
Yeah.
Barter is the alternative to having currency, and barter is very difficult. Currency makes barter unnecessary, and therefore the world wants to have currency. It's looking for something it can trust, and it trusts the dollar.
So what's going to happen? Is this guy going to, is he going to pay a price for this? Is he going to, clearly he's going to lose everything he has, but he's cost a lot. Well, the people cost themselves because they did this willingly, right? The people who bought into Bitcoin did it willingly. Nobody twisted their arms. There's nothing they're going to get back out of it. They've been scammed, and that's...
Well, I mean, that's somewhat true, but they were influenced by individuals that usually that promote it. And then
that's still...
But like whenever you promote, and this is, I think, an issue with legislation on behalf of the SEC, because like when you promote... When you promote cryptocurrency, you can put like a little tag saying this is not financial advice to appease the law. But the issue with that is that objectively it is financial advice when you promote. It's no different than, you know, you watching your favorite investor and him giving predictions or him communicating to what's up.
Connor, you're smart. That's you're right. The people who are going to get you know what happens is that.
You made my soul a burning fire. You're getting to be my one.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, this guy, he was teaching. They were teaching master's classes in Washington, D.C., and to teach people, you know, how and to make this happen. They, you know, donating more than $40 million to various political causes. And I mean, this thing was on its way.
FTX and cryptocurrency. Yeah. I mean, it was quite the go-go thing. The view was that it was the creation of FTX and creating this marketplace and a large and liquid market for cryptocurrency was a big part of people deciding that cryptocurrency and bitcoins, et cetera, could become very valuable. And bitcoins went way up in value, up into the, $80,000. They got very valuable, and now they're not. They're much less. And it all has to do with this people's belief that they have something that can be used as a currency that they can have faith in. And the fact that it went up and down was the beginning of the problem for Bitcoin, because you're not going to use it as a currency if one day it's worth, if your dollar is worth $1 one day and 50 cents the next and $1.50 the next, that's not a very good currency.
So is this the death knell for cryptocurrency? Has it died on the vine?
I think cryptocurrencies, you know, the bare naked cryptocurrency is going to have trouble for a long time in terms of people trusting it, because one of the things that does not exist with cryptocurrency is stable valuation. Gold, when it was the basis for currencies, was kept stable because dollars, for instance, were worth an ounce of gold was worth $35. That connection meant that gold was worth $35 an ounce. And it kept gold near $35 an ounce the whole time that it was backed that way.
So cryptocurrency has nothing behind it.
Right.
Well, I mean, is this young man going to jail?
I don't know whether what laws he might have violated. If he committed fraud, and I think what he's trying to do now is go around on a PR campaign saying, you know, I'm too dumb to commit fraud. Yeah. I'm too careless to commit a fraud. I'm negligent, but I'm not fraudulent. And fraud does require that you do it with malice aforethought, that you're actually trying to commit this fraud. And so I think his view is, and is kind of an amateur, he's an amateur lawyer representing himself, because his lawyers have said, you know, don't talk. He's busily talking, telling people, look, I'm a nice guy. I probably got cocky. I just was listening to him getting interviewed. This is literally what he said. I'm a nice guy. I got cocky. I got ahead of myself. I was really careless. Oh, my gosh. I made lots of mistakes. I'm so sorry.
Well,
and he hopes, I think that because he's going to lose all his money, and what he wants to do is not go to jail, right?
Right.
So fraud gets you to jail. Going broke doesn't get you to jail.
Yeah, and he's a young guy. He's got a whole lot of life ahead of him.
Right, and so, and I think actually, if his defense works, that will help him with respect to the likes of Tom Brady and others, these celebrities who were used by FTX to go to the public to try and give the public comfort that FTX was a safe place to trade their securities, to trade their bitcoins and other virtual currencies, and that virtual currencies were the wave of the future, and that FTX was a great institution. You know, and then people like Tom Brady apparently got big pieces of value out of that. They I think they got equity interests in FTX itself worth many millions of dollars. And so the fact that they went to the public and extolled the virtue of FTX without doing any independent research into FTX's actual, you know, the way it was being administered, puts them into an exposed position, particularly since there wasn't a disclaimer saying, I don't really know anything about FTX or FTX and the trading of bitcoins and other virtual currencies, an extremely risky endeavor. So none of that happened. And so, you know, that they have been sued. There might be merit to the lawsuit. My guess is that we'll read someday that tens of millions of dollars in settlement have been paid by the likes of Tom Brady to the people who have been damaged by the FTX collapse.
But they will never get back what many people lost. I mean, that money is gone forever.
Apparently. There has been a receiver essentially put in charge of it, and that receiver has said, look, we can't even find all the assets, we can't find all the accounts. I mean, it's a messier proposition than Enron was.
So now that these bitcoins, they're there, people have them, I guess you just hold on to them for nostalgic.
No, bitcoins aren't worthless. They haven't become worthless. They've just declined materially in value. And all of the virtual currencies have declined in value. Very few of them have become worthless.
So would you say, based on the trajectory of what's taking place now, it's safe to say they're headed towards, you know, being almost a total loss than they are recovering?
Can I say something?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Bitcoin and just cryptocurrency in general is going to go this very similar direction that internet sites went in the early 2000s following the .com bubble crash. Like, you're going to have a couple of really, really of cryptocurrencies that are able to find some practical usage outside of just valuation and speculation being the purveyor of its value. And those are going to become more commonly adopted, like Bitcoin and maybe Ethereum. And then the rest, because this is an exchange, right? FTX was an exchange where tons of other separate types of cryptocurrencies for different purposes exist on. But there are lots of you know, people that cover cryptocurrency that are in the market that say that a lot of these organizations are, you know, either Ponzi schemes or some type of pyramid operation, or, you know, there's fraud going on. And I mean, just a couple of months ago, it was the downfall of Terra, which is a stable coin, and that's supposed to be like the stable currency for the exchange.
Well, a stable coin was something that was traded. It was like a hedge. It was it was related to the value of other things, and so it was a derivative is the term for it.
Okay.
And so it was deemed to be essentially an invalid kind of derivative. This is another semester, but
derivative. Are we doing calculus here?
Yeah, no. Derivatives are a form of security, and Bitcoin had its original value because of the ability to transact in totally secret ways. And, you know, it's long been viewed as something that criminals use, and they probably do use it. Criminals are less inclined to require stability because they're trading something that they stole and or that's illegal. And so it's like money laundering. The value of the currency becomes less important than what you end up with being a large amount.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.